ghost of Christmas present appeared at the appointed time. And after Scrooge had awakened and collected himself, this time he spoke submissively.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learned a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe.
Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. He led him straight to the home of Bob Cratchit, Scrooge's clerk. Mrs. Cratchit was anxiously asking,
Whatever has happened to your precious father and to your brother, Tiny Tim? And Martha weren't as late last Christmas by half an hour.
Here's Martha, mother, said a girl, appearing as she spoke. Here's Martha, mother, cried the two young Cratchits.
Hurrah, there's such a goose, Martha.
Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are.
We'd a deal of work to finish up last night, replied the girl, and we had to clear away this morning, mother, but I shall lie abed tomorrow morning.
Well, never mind, so long as ye are come, said Mrs. Cratchit. Sit ye down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm Lord bless ye.
No, no, here's father coming,
cried the two young Cratchits, who were everywhere at once.
Hide, Martha, hide.
So Martha hid herself, and in came little Bob, the father, with at least 3 feet of comforter, exclusive of the fringe, hanging down before him, and his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
Why, where's our Martha? Said Bob Cratchit, looking around.
She's not coming.
Not coming? Not coming upon Christmas Day?
Martha didn't like to see him disappointed, even if it were only a joke, so she came out prematurely from behind the closet door and ran into his arms, while the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim and bore him off into the wash house that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper.
And how did little Tim behave? Asked Mrs. Cratchit.
Ah, oh, as good as gold, and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful, sitting by himself so much, and he thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Well, Master Peter and the two ubiquitous young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession. Such a bustle ensued that you might have thought a goose the rarest of all birds, a feathered phenomenon to which a black swan was a matter of course. And in truth, it was something like it in that house. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates, and Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table. And the two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody, not forgetting themselves, and mounting guard upon their posts, crammed spoons into their mouths, lest they should shriek for goose before their turn came to be helped. At last the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it into the breast. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight arose all around the board, and even Tiny Tim, excited by the two young Cratchits, beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried, Hurrah! There never was such a goose. Bob said he didn't believe there ever was such a goose cooked. Its tenderness and flavor, size and cheapness, were the themes of universal admiration. But now, the plates being changed by Miss Belinda, Mrs. Cratchit left the room, too nervous to bear witness, to take the pudding up and bring it in.
Hello, and a great deal of steam. The pudding was out of the copper.
A smell like a washing day. That was the cloth. A smell like an eating house and a pastry cook's next door to each other with a laundress's next door to that. That was the pudding. Oh, it was a wonderful pudding. Bob Cratchit said, and calmly, too, that he regarded it as the greatest success achieved by Mrs. Cratchit since their marriage. Well, at last the dinner was all done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up. All the Cratchits drew around the hearth in what Bob Cratchit called a circle, meaning half a one. And at Bob Cratchit's elbow stood the family display of glass, two tumblers and a custard cup without a handle. Then Bob proposed,
"A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. May God bless us."
Which all the family re-echoed.
"God bless us, everyone,"
said Tiny Tim, last of all. He sat very close to his father's side upon his little stool, and Bob held his withered little hand in his as if he loved the child and wished to keep him by his side and dreaded that he might be taken from him.
"Spirit, spirit,"
said Scrooge with an interest he had never felt before,
"tell me if Tiny Tim will live."
"I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die."
"No, no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared."
Scrooge bent before the ghost's rebuke and, trembling, cast his eyes upon the ground. Scrooge stopped short upon hearing his own name.
"Mr. Scrooge," said Bob Cratchit, "I'll give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast." "The founder of the feast, indeed," cried Mrs. Cratchit, reddening. "I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I'd bet he'd have good appetite for it."
"Why, my dear, the children, Christmas Day."
"Well, it should be Christmas Day, I am sure, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it any better than you do, poor fellow."
"My dear, Christmas Day."
"Well, I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, but not for his. A long life to him, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt."
The children drank the toast after her, but it was the first of their proceedings which had no heartiness in it. Tiny Tim drank it last of all, but he didn't care a tuppence for it. Scrooge was the ogre of the family. The mention of his name cast a dark shadow on the party, which was not dispelled for full 5 minutes. But then the scene changed, and out of a moment's indecision, Scrooge was surprised to hear a hearty laugh. But it was a much greater surprise to Scrooge to recognize it as his own nephew's, and to find himself in a bright, gleaming room with a spirit standing still by his side. You know, if you should happen to know a man more blessed in a laugh than Scrooge's nephew, I should like to know who he is.
Oh, you know what he said? He said Christmas was a humbug. Oh, he's a comical old fellow, that's the truth, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him.
Oh, I am sure he is very rich, Fred, hinted Scrooge's niece. At least you always tell me so.
Well, what of that, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him. He don't do any good with it. He don't make himself comfortable with it. He hasn't the satisfaction of thinking he's ever going to benefit us with it, that's for sure.
Oh, dear. They were devoting the evening to games and music. Scrooge's niece played well upon the harp and played, among other tunes, a simple little air, a mere nothing. You might have learned to whistle it in 2 minutes. But it had been familiar to Scrooge when he was a child. When this strain of music sounded, all the things that ghost had shown him came upon his mind, and Scrooge softened more and more, and thought that if he could have listened to it often, years ago, he might have cultivated the kindnesses of life for his own happiness and with his own hands without resorting to the sexton's spade that buried Jacob Marley. But they didn't devote the whole evening to music. After a while, they played at forfeits, for it is good to be children sometimes, and never better than at Christmas when its mighty founder was a child himself. First, there was a game of blind man's bluff. Of course there was. And then there was a game called Yes and No, or 20 Questions, where Scrooge's nephew had to think of something, and the rest must find out what. He only answering to their questions, yes or no, as the case was. Well, the brisk fire of questionings to which he was exposed elicited from him that he was thinking of an animal. A live animal? Yes, a rather disagreeable animal. Yeah. A savage animal? Yes, an animal that growled and grunted sometimes, yes, and talked sometimes, yes. And he lived in London, yes, and he walked about the streets. No, he wasn't made a show of. He wasn't led by anybody. He didn't live in a menagerie. No, he was never killed in a market. And he was not a horse or an ass or a cow or a bull or a tiger or a dog or a pig or a cat or a bear. And at every fresh question that was put to him, this nephew burst into a fresh roar of laughter and was so inexpressibly tickled, he was obliged to get off the sofa and stamp. At last, the plump sister, falling into a similar state, cried out, I have found it. I know what it is, Fred. I know what it is. It's your Uncle Scrooge. Which it certainly was. Well, he has given us plenty of merriment, I am sure. It would be ungrateful not to drink his health. So, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man, whatever he is. He wouldn't take it from me, but he may have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge! Uncle Scrooge had imperceptibly become so gay and light of heart that he would have pledged the unconscious company in return and thanked them in inaudible speech if the ghost had given him time. But the whole scene of the passed off in the breath of the last word spoken by his nephew. And as he heard the chimes strike 12, Scrooge looked about him for the ghost, but saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery.
I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come, said Scrooge.
But the spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand.
You are about to show me shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, Spirit?
The Spirit inclined its head. That was the only answer he received.
Lead on, lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, old Spirit.
The phantom moved away as it had come towards him. Scrooge followed in the shadow of its dress, which bore him up, he thought, and carried him along. As they entered the city, the spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen, and observing that the hand was pointed to them, Scrooge advanced to listen to their talk.
Oh, no,
said a great fat man with a monstrous chin.
I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
Oh, when did he die?
Oh, last night, I believe.
What was the matter with him?
Asked a third man, taking a vast quantity of snuff out of a very large snuff box.
You know, I thought he'd never die.
God knows what happened to him.
Hey, what has he done with his money?
Oh, he left it to his company, perhaps. He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know. You know, it's likely to be a very cheap funeral, for upon my life, I don't know of anybody to go to it.
You know, I'll offer to go if anybody else will. When I come to think of it, I'm not at all sure that I wasn't his most particular friend. We used to stop and speak whenever we met. Bye-bye.
Not another word. That was their meeting, their conversation, and their parting. They left this scene and went into an obscure part of the town, where Scrooge had never penetrated before, although he recognized its situation and its bad repute. The ways were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, the people half-naked, drunken, slipshod, and ugly. Far in this den of infamous resort, there was a low-browed beetling shop below a penthouse roof, where iron, old rags, bottles, and bones, and greasy offal were bought. Upon the floor within were piled up heaps of rusty keys, nails, chains, and refuse iron of all kinds. Sitting in amongst the wares he dealt in, by a charcoal stove made of old bricks, was a gray-haired rascal, nearly 70 years of age. Scrooge and the Phantom came into the presence of this man just as two women and a man slunk into the shop.
"Very well, then,"
the first woman was saying.
"That's enough. Who's the worst for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose. If he wanted to keep them after he was dead, the wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was lying there struck with death instead of gasping out his last air alone by himself. Open that bundle, old Joe, and let me know the value of it."
But the gallantry of her friends would not allow of this, and the man in faded black mounted the breach first and produced his plunder. It was not extensive. A seal or two, a pencil case, a pair of sleeve buttons, and a brooch of no great value were all. They were severally examined and appraised by old Joe, who chalked the sums he was disposed to give for each upon the wall and added them up into a total when he found that there was nothing more to come.
"That's your account," said Joe. "Who's next?"
"Now undo mine, Joe."
Joe went down on his knees for the greater convenience of opening it, and having unfastened a great many knots, dragged out a large, heavy roll of some dark stuff.
What do you call this? Bed curtains?
Bed curtains.
You don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there?
Yes, I do. Why not?
Well, I just hope he didn't die of anything catching.
Scrooge listened to this dialogue in horror as they sat grouped about their spoil.
"Spirit, spirit,"
he said, shuddering from head to foot.
"I see. The case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends this way. Let me see some tenderness connected with a death, or this dark chamber and gruesome sight will be forever present to me."
The ghost conducted him through several streets familiar to his feet, and as they went along, Scrooge looked here and there to find himself, but nowhere was he to be seen. They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated around the fire. The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face.
"The color hurts my eyes."
"The color? No. Poor Tiny Tim."
"They're better now again. It makes them weak by candlelight. And I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time."
"Past it, rather," Peter answered, shutting up his book. "But I think he has walked a little slower than he used these few last evenings, Mother." They were very quiet again. And at last she said, and in a steady, cheerful voice that only faltered once,
"I have known him walk with... I have known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder, very fast indeed. But he was very light to carry,
and his father loved him so that it was no trouble. No trouble. There's your father at the door.
She hurried out to meet him, and little Bob in his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. And then the two young Cratchits got upon his knees and laid each child a little cheek against his face as if they said, "Don't mind it, Father. Don't be grieved." They drew about the fire and talked, the girls and mother working still, and Bob told them, "However and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim."
"Oh, never, Father,"
they all cried.
"And I know," said Bob, "I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although he was a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget Tiny Tim in doing it."
"Oh, no, never, Father,"
they all cried again.
"I am very happy, very happy."
Spirit of Tiny Tim, thy childish essence is from God. The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him into the resorts of businessmen, but showed him not himself. The phantom then led him to an iron gate, a churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge advanced towards it, trembling.
"Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of the things that may be only?"
Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood.
"Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me."
The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
"Spirit, spirit,"
he cried, tight clutching at its robe,
"hear me. I am not the man I was. Why show me this if I am past all hope?"
For the first time, the hand appeared to shake.
"Good spirit, good spirit, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life."
The kind hand trembled.
"I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past and the present and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone."
In his agony, he caught the spectral hand, but it sought to free itself. But Scrooge was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.